all these little things start adding up, showing appreciation, see, the transparency, the conversation, the dialogue, the self-help, the actions, the gradual actions that the organization's taking. So all these little, I always say all, a lot of little things add up to a big impact. And that's what changes the culture, not just, hey, I'm going to implement this, walk away from it, and that's it.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Baubert Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. I'm here with Marvin, Dr. Marvin, rather, Dietz. How's it going today, doctor?
It's going great. No need to call me doctor because I don't do any operations or anything. You don't want me doing those type of surgeries, but it is going great. I'm having a terrific day, and it's great to be here with you. And welcome, Rochester.
Yeah, welcome, everybody. I'm super excited because I like the topic of conversation here. You're the owner of Customer Happiness Institute. You're the North American partner for 2 Days Mood. And honestly, I just like the conversation right off the bat because we're about satisfaction. We're about happiness. We're about growth. I'm sure the conversation will go in that direction. But to introduce, obviously, you can introduce what you do a lot better than I can. Obviously, you help with customer satisfaction. Let's begin with customer relationship management, the Customer Happiness Institute. What is that business and what do you do for people?
Yeah. So, and I would say just correct you by saying it's not just customer satisfaction. It's customer excitement. It's incredible customer journeys. But no, thank you very much. And so, yeah, just a little background on how I got to the Customer Happiness Institute. I've been blessed to teach here locally for the Rochester Institute of Technology. And I've been teaching for a master's program that I graduated from many, many years ago, and teaching customer centricity. And I've become quite an expert in it because I've been teaching it for 12 years, and I've been teaching it here in Rochester, but also at their overseas campuses in Croatia and Dubai, Dominican Republic. So, I'm passionate about creating a customer-centric culture. We live here in the backyard of Wegmans, one of the most customer-centric cultures in the world, so I can relate to that. I grew up going to Wegmans. And really, Customer Centricity and Customer Happiness Institute is about helping companies create an incredible wow experience, no matter what your organization sells, whether it's service, products, paperclips, Disney, whatever it might be, but it's creating that incredible customer journey. And so we help companies along those journeys. And the technology that we have that helps facilitate that is 2 Days Mood. And while I was teaching out in Dubai, I was introduced to an organizational psychologist from this company, 2 Days Mood, based out of the Netherlands, fifth happiest country in the world, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. United States is probably number 24, number 25, somewhere around there. I was fascinated by what they were doing. They were measuring moods of employees and doing it in 15 seconds and then what was driving those moods. So, of course, that fits right into my classes, customer centricity and creating customer-centric culture, because it's really all about the employees, because they're going to deliver that incredible experience. So I was fascinated by the technology, spoke in one of my classes, and fast forward a year and a half later, became a managing partner in the business, opening up North America, but also helping out globally, global expansion with 2 Days Mood, and then kind of bringing my master's class that I've been teaching for RIT to life through the technology. So helping companies measure customer moods in 15 seconds and what's driving those moods. But it is all about creating that wow culture, if you will, with your employees, with your customers, and getting people excited and energized about working or experiencing something from a consumer's perspective. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. The Customer Happiness Institute happens to be the consulting arm of my company that I started many, many years ago. But right now the focus really is on today's mood and helping us create happiness throughout the entire world really is our goal.
I love it. And I want to dive into today's mood in a moment. I actually was going to ask you, we can talk offline, but if there's any way I can get in on the app and try it out, because reading about it's amazing. I want to get into that tool in a moment, but I want to start off just asking the question, because a lot of my listeners are business owners, or they're ultimately in leadership roles in their business. They're entrepreneurs, they're thought leaders, they're starting a business. Maybe they're a salesperson within the business. Today's mood is a great tool for any business, but I'm wondering if someone were to start something today free of charge, do you have any tips or tricks to, you know, grow, you know, centricity in the workplace culture, to have better customer satisfaction? Today's mood's a great tool. I want to use it and I want to get into that. But let's start off with just free advice of something we should start today, you know, immediately that can help us out with our customer centricity and satisfaction.
Yeah, great question. And I think really it comes down to the big paradigm shift, because I think a lot of us have considered creating a customer-centric culture, becoming customer-centric as a customer service department, and it's only the customer service department. It really is a holistic approach to your company. And the first thing that you need to do is to put your employees first and put them at the top and a paramount focus of your company. A lot of companies are going to, you know, start up and they're going to focus in on their product and their brand strategy and their market strategy. But you really want to focus in on your culture and your people first, because what you create is going to permeate down into whatever you're selling, whether it's a product or service. And I'll give you an example. If you look at Zappos, which is world famous, known for their world famous service, selling online, started with selling online shoes, became a billion-dollar company. And Tony Hsieh, when he started it, and as he started developing his business and really growing it, when he started focusing in on the culture and his people, that's when the company doubled and tripled in size. So my recommendation is always have, you know, a people plan of what kind of culture you're going to create. Mission and vision is great, but if it's not practiced and permeated and known throughout your organization, small or large, that's truly what matters. And then establish that up front, and then the rest will come, you know, as far as working on all the other marketing and the mission statement and all those other, you know, the objectives and strategies. But focusing on your, you know, what your culture is going to be, what you want it to be, and how you're going to engage and get your employees excited about what they're doing and convey the purpose, the why of your company. And it's not just, hey, we're here to make money and profits. We're, you know, it's about really, what are you trying to do? There's always an underlying why. Simon Sinek created the why, if you will. But that purpose, and everything's going to be around that purpose, and then creating a customer-centric culture around it. What is the culture around that purpose as well? But that's where I would start first and foremost before you start cascading down into the other things. It's really about serving your employees and just, you know, and the rest will come.
Yeah, without a doubt. You mentioned Simon Sinek. He has a great TED Talk on, you know, starting with why. Many people have seen it. If you haven't, you should, and you should. But ultimately what he dives into is starting with why, then moving into how, then moving into what. Because if the why is strong, if the mission to serve your community, this is just an example, your mission's to serve your community, to help at least 3 new people a day and have a workplace culture that allows yourself to expand and grow your message, to all the avenues that ultimately you're trying to reach. I'm making this up as I go, but if that's your why and it's permeated in your culture, then you figure out how and what. But if you come out and say, this is my product and service, this is my ROI, and people aren't attached to your why and don't see your passion for why you're doing your business, they might get lost on the message in the first place. And a second side note is two people that have been on the show, Coach Jim Johnson, great leadership coach, basketball coach, and Bob Whipple, he's actually the leadership ambassador, wrote 4 or 5 books on it. Those are episodes people should check out to dive deeper into leadership. Let's talk about why, because it seems like in today's mood, the why is the most important thing. I mean, you've got the smiley face behind you. You're the founder, the owner of the Happiness Institute. We're looking at satisfaction. We're looking at happiness. You said more than satisfaction. We're looking at people that are excited to show up to work and passionate about their work. Tell us about today's mood. Maybe start with the why, you know, the meaning behind the product and the project, and then we'll dive into exactly how it works.
Absolutely. It really comes down to, you know, what are people feeling inside? I think it's been very taboo and very, you know, hands off, if you will, especially here in America and US, is, you know, it's too touchy-feely. How am I feeling at this time? We don't, you know, as we're working with people and interacting with people, we never know how people are feeling. Do we really truly ask? We might ask just a general ask, but if we could ask them in their privacy, in their own time, in their own environments, how are you feeling at this moment, and give them an outlet to express that, then think about how powerful that is. Now, not only that individual, but as today's mood looks at it and facilitates it, you know, that mood is going to roll up to an average by a department or the organization or a team. And you have to start looking at your organization as a living organism, right? It's got to, you know, it's a system, and there is input, processes, and output, and continue improvement. And ultimately, you want to know where your living organism is with the mood. And so that individual and how they answer that and how they convey their feeling is going to roll up to an average of, like I said, the organization, the team. So you know exactly how they're feeling in real time. But not only how they're feeling emotionally, inside at work, but also what are the drivers? What is driving that mood? So I'm in a terrific mood today. Now I'm going to tell you a little bit about what's driving that mood, you know, maybe through an open-ended question that will roll up, and artificial intelligence will show you. But also around different drivers of the employee experience or the customer experience. There's different elements of it. And so we created all these scientific statements around it. So not only are we asking the mood, how are you feeling now inside, but also, how are you faring within these certain elements of that employee journey? And the key is not to ask people everything all at once, right? It's to always check in. How are you feeling? How are you feeling? And ask them a little. People have a very short attention span, as we know. We're all busy, getting hit with so many different things. But if you can have them focus on one small little element of the journey, of the employee journey, and get some feedback on that, then ultimately it's going to roll up, and you're going to see your living organism, your organization, your department, your team, in the mood of the team and what's driving that mood within the different parts of the employee journey. So you can start taking action, understand what's most important to get that mood higher and more into the excited level. And that's ultimately where you want to do, is drive people, not just from being satisfied, but you want people excited and energized about what they're doing. And that goes back to the why as well. So that's kind of really the essence of the why. Is really getting into people's hearts and their emotions and their brains and find out, you know, how are you doing today? So it's that check-in process that's really important, but also letting them answer freely, anonymously, and then looking at your organization as a holistic system.
Got it. So it's completely anonymous, so people can freely. I'll tell you ultimately, Marvin, personally, if the answer is good, which is a common response when someone asks, how you doing today? If the answer is good, that usually for me means average to below average. Because if I'm pumped up, I'm excited, it's great, I have a story, I don't even answer the question, I start telling a story. But a lot of times, if you know a superior in my previous roles were to ask how I was doing, I would smile and wave and say, I'm doing well today. But it's quite possible that I'm having a shitty day and it's terrible. So you're saying that anonymously I can basically explain my mood and my emotional state. And it sounds like it's on an ongoing basis. Not to down talk a personality exam, but let's say you take a personality exam, have your personality traits, and you put that on your wall and you think of yourself as one person the rest of your life. Things can change, right? This is basically an ongoing basis taking data. Let's dive into exactly how it works. You know, let's say I had my phone in my hand or I was on my laptop. What does the survey look like and what kind of data are you taking?
Yeah. So, and keep in mind, it's, you know, it can be scheduled once a week, once cool. every week. So it's, but usually best practices are once a week and it's only 15 seconds at a time.
Literally 15 seconds?
That's how quick the process is.
Send me the link. I'll do it while you're talking. It's that quick.
Exactly. Very, very quickly. And delivered by the organization on a specific day and time, either via app or email or Slack or Microsoft Teams. So what you're going to see is what we do is we use, it's called the Russell Circumplex of Emotional Classification. I know it's kind of a bunch of words there and a gentleman's name, but gentleman, he studied human emotions over 30 years. God yeah. bless him. And he came to the conclusion that we could have 41 different emotions at any one time. And he took these emotions and put them in four different quadrants, very excited, satisfied, dissatisfied, and stressed. So we kind of overlaid that model, created emojis for each one of those 41 different emotions, put them in our four quadrants, but we only show when the employee gets it, they're going to see, you know, probably eight of the top emojis, two in each quadrant to choose from. And if they can't find the emotion that expresses how they feel right now, they can click on more and actually see the balance of the emojis in the Russell Circumplex emotional classification. Now, the employees have no idea about this, there's science behind it, but all what they're doing is they want to express themselves on how they're feeling at this moment through an emoji, through choosing an emoji. It's just touching that emoji. And then they have the ability to put in, you know, it was a customized question. Oh, you answered it excited. You know, give me a word or a few words that, you know, expresses why you're excited. It's optional. And then after that, the second part of the process is a couple follow-up statements. On a Likert scale of 0 to 5, how do you feel about this? And those are carefully crafted, part of a scientific model around 15 drivers, but carefully worded in short and sweet that the employee will choose, you know, how they feel about those two or three things. And then the last part is just a funny cartoon at the end of the process. And it's, and we have a full database of cartoons and inspirational quotes. But what's amazing is how many employees actually look forward to the cartoons. This is what they're saying, at least. Oh, Marvin, you know, we stopped for 2 weeks and the cartoons, we missed, you know, my employees were like freaking out because they're not getting the car. What they're really saying is they miss giving their feedback and they like the process and the cartoons are, you know, kind of a chuckle at the end. So, but that's really how the process works. But the analytics and data that rolls up by departments, by gender, by generation, by sub-departments, you have an idea of exactly what the mood is that week for a particular department. And then things started populating over the week so you could start seeing a picture of exactly what's going on. I like to say that it's almost like going to the doctor and getting your blood work and getting your vital signs. And the doctor comes over with a computer and says, all right, here's the medication you need to go on. Here's all your figures. I mean, think if you could do that every week, with your culture. Well, I like to use the analogy because that's really what today's mood is really all about, is getting a pulse of your culture diagnostics in real time, and you're doing it every week. So you think about how proactive you can be with that kind of data, and transparency and all the other things that come along with it.
That's incredible. It's a short time investment. You're bringing in a ton of data over time. Give us a story, you know, of North American company or beyond. I mean, this is an international project, right? Give us a story of a business that used this over a long period of time and some of the feedback you got from them.
Sure, absolutely. I just got a letter, a testimonial from a customer. It's been a customer for about 7 months. And the gentleman's a general manager of these three group homes for troubled teens. And he has about 60 or 70 employees. And obviously, it's been very tough for them during the pandemic. These kids live there, and it's a very tough environment, especially now that they can't get out. When he originally started with Today's Mood, they had some issues in his culture, and they ran a baseline to kind of see where they were at with moods and everything around those 15 drivers. And, you know, we saw that 75% of his employees at all three locations and even the headquarters were really dissatisfied or stressed. There's a lot of red on their heat map, if you will. So he knew he had a lot of work to do. But what he did was he started having these weekly meetings with his leaders, and then each team that were on the, you know, frontline workers as well, and sharing the data, and also not only sharing the data and the mood distribution, but also getting feedback from them on, hey, you know, we see these areas, you know, that are challenging right now. We really want to, you know, help make some changes. We need your feedback. So asking them for feedback. And then once a month, he'd have a meeting with everybody, all the entire company, through Zoom, and kind of walk through some of the results. But within a 7 month period, he said, "Marvin, it was amazing. I started seeing the culture actually changing. People started to come into work. They started more often not being calling in sick. Sure. They started smiling. They started interacting." He gradually saw a change in the culture just by using the product, having those discussions. And then at the end of the 7 months, when he sent me this letter, the numbers had flipped to the point where 75% to 80% of his organization were excited and satisfied. 25%, majority of them on the stressful side, because it is a stressful job. So he was just like blown away by this. And, you know, I asked for the testimonial because I knew he was very happy. He wrote a 5-page testimonial. God bless him. He was almost like a conversation, "Marvin, and I did this and I did that and we did this and I love that." God bless him. It was just so genuine, so from the heart. Honestly, I had tears. Yes, I'm an emotional guy sometimes. Tears in my eyes reading this, because I was just so just appreciative that we had an impact on this organization. And then think about the teenagers and the impact that it probably had on them to be dealing with employees that were much more engaged and happier too. That is just incredible. I'm getting chills just talking about it. Sorry.
It is just incredible.
You're not going to get me to cry like the famous movie, Jerry Maguire. You're not going to get me to cry. I'm not going to cry on TV.
I'm not Oprah. I don't know if I can get you to cry over Zoom, but
and Oprah doesn't have a beard like you. So I don't think,
it's truly incredible. I'm thinking here because, you know, you were mentioning the cartoons at the end, and there's emojis, which kind of gamifies it, makes it fun, makes it interesting. But it sounds like at the end of the day, the software, it's not designed to just put someone in a good mood for the day, right? Give them a cartoon that they can laugh at, something simple, easy to make them smile. It's actually designed to take long-term data on the mood of your company culture, based on the department, based on the leadership team, and utilize that data, right? It's not a quick fix where you give someone a survey and then they're happy, right?
No, and yeah, and it's, you know, if you are just a company, you implement this and you do nothing. You don't have any monthly, weekly meetings, you don't make any changes, you don't have any conversations. Guess what? You're probably going to have, your culture is probably going to be worse off because of the fact that you implemented this, you know, these big surveys and you're doing nothing about it. And you're doing them once a week. So the key is to have the data to know where you can take subtle, and it's not rocket science. We're talking like areas of appreciation, okay? Of understanding of internal communication. Like those are the things that are going to be pointed out. And usually it's something that's not, that doesn't take a lot of resources, but just, oh, okay, we need to start showing our employees more appreciation. How do we do that as leaders? So it's the conversations and the transparency, because also employees are privy to some of the data as well, that begins to change the culture. It's also, you know, the I mentioned that there's also a self-help component where employees can actually see their own moods in real time as part of that week. They get a week report. Every employee gets a week report of the data of themselves, their team, and the organization, the mood distribution, and how does it compare to the previous week, and so on and so forth. So to have that to be a part of the employee, the transparency, and then the employee can go into our e-learning environment and actually do work on themselves personally and professionally. All these little things start adding up, showing appreciation, see the transparency, the conversation, the dialogue, the self-help, the actions, the gradual actions that the organization's taking. So all these little, I always say all, a lot of little things add up to a big impact. And that's what changes the culture. Not just, hey, I'm going to implement this, walk away from it, and that's it. Nothing works is that easy, as we know, right? It's like, you know, hey, I'm going to take this pill and lose all this weight, and that's all I got to do. Well, you got to exercise. You got to, you know, there's a lot of other things you got to do. So same thing with today's mood. It's not the magic pill, if you will. There, you know, and the other thing is you got to be willing to face the data, especially if you're the CEO and you see that a lot of the data and the results are pointing to them on how, you know, leadership is viewed by the organization. You might have to have an aha moment. And that's another example where we actually had a company in the Netherlands. In 6 months, the two owners realized that they were the problem, and they actually moved out of the building and managed and empowered the employees after that to take charge and kind of run the organization. Wow. And it just exploded. And they realized that they were the problem. So that was, that's another thing, is you're going to have those aha moments.
Yeah, it sounds like with information, it can be good or it could be bad. In theory, I'm imagining a situation where I have my aha moment that I'm miserable at work and my mood is actually depreciated over time, even though the average of my coworkers is rising. That might be an aha moment that I'm in the wrong company. That could be a great company. However, it's not a good role for me, and I can move on and move into a role that I can better serve, you know, my purpose and my company. And so you, the information is, it's opening Pandora's box, right? But right. I think that's a good thing because, I mean, don't they say that knowledge is power? You know, they say ignorance is bliss. These are all cliches, but ignorance is bliss until your company starts to go under because you've got unhappy employees, you know?
There's always, always room for improvement. You know, even companies that say, hey, I've got all these awards. I mean, that's happened too. Your company here in Rochester had all these awards that were a great place to work and this and that all these years in a row. And we did a baseline with a couple departments, and the owner's like, oh, my God. You know, we started getting defensive in the meeting as I was going through the data with them and realized, wow, I'm not as good as I think I thought I was. I want to open this up to the entire company and work on some of the things that we need to address. So, yeah, you do have those aha moments. But if you really want to make an impact, you know, on your organization, then you have to face it.
Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of people listening, they do want to make an impact. They might be part of a large organization or they might be a one man show, 3-person team, 10-person team. Is this product for everyone? Does it work best in a large organization with lots of teams. I imagine you get the most data, obviously. It does work great in a corporate structure. But if I have five employees, is it for everyone? How would that work?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, you want to have the minimum employees for data to roll up is five. So we have a setting that can set it to two, but we really want to protect the anonymity of the, you know, of the participants.
That'd be funny. Yeah.
I'm just like, you know, somebody have a department of one and they're giving feedback and like, okay, I believe that's Johnny giving us the feedback.
So it's not it's not for couples. It's not for couples.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good one. I like that then. No, so you got, you know, we have organizations with a minimum, you know, that have like 10 or 12 employees, and they look at, you know, they don't break them into departments. It's over, they're looking at the overall organization. So I would say that's number one. Number two is, if you're not ready to face the, you know, to know that you have things to work on and to really implement this and do the work around it, because, you know, and just sit on it and not do anything, then I don't recommend using any tools, including today's moon, because you're just not ready yet. So you got to be open and ready to say, you know what, I want to change my organization. I don't want to just measure what's going on once a year. I want to do it on a weekly basis. And we want to start to have, you know, and our teams to start having some conversations around that. So you got to be open and ready for it. And we're seeing right now, since the pandemic hit, a lot of organizations are changing. Ones that didn't want anything to do with us before are saying, wow, you know what? Today's move was kind of ahead of their time here in the United States. Now it's, you know, it's about our employees and about employee happiness, not satisfaction. With all due respect, I know you brought up the word satisfaction,
sure.
But we want people energized and excited. Ultimately, that's our vision. That's our goal. That's our mission. We want people excited, energized about what they're doing, about their life. We want it to permeate beyond just this tool. That's truly our mission, to, you know, help people become happier people overall. The Netherlands, fifth happiest country in the world. They're doing something right out there, and God love them. They are very happy people. So there's a lot we can learn from them.
Yeah, a lot to learn. And again, satisfactory is satisfactory, but it's just satisfactory. I mean, it's in the world. Do we want to be average, or do we want to be, you know, passionate and excited to go to work? I'll tell you personally, I like conversations like this, but I'm not a huge extrovert, walk around, talk to everybody in the office. I'm not like excited in the morning for water cooler talk, you know, over coffee, any of that kind of stuff. So I kind of like working from home, right? My mood lifted working from home because I have my space. I can reach people very easily at any time. I like working from home, but a lot of other people are polar opposite, and they think I'm a jerk for what I just said, because they get energy and they're excited to see people at work and hear about their day and sit down and have a coffee. And it sounds like in a virtual world where a lot of people are having a different reaction to this, this is a way to ultimately poll and figure out, okay, are people unhappy at, you know, home? And that person that wants to have, you know, a conversation about their day, they might not be comfortable calling Marvin and saying, hey, I need to talk. So this is a way that they could, in the comfort, still have those small conversations, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, a lot of people are very, you know, protective of letting people know what's going on, and to be able to do it in your own environment, wherever you might be, whether it's home, office, or whatever, is just, you know, people are more open to giving, you know, honest, you know, feedback in that area. So, but yeah, no, you nailed it.
Cool. And one thing we always touch about, blah, 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 blah. This is the second episode that I haven't been able to talk. I recorded one yesterday, couldn't talk then, couldn't talk today. Don't know why. I think it might be a caffeine issue, but I'm losing my ability to speak, Marvin. It's been pretty humorous.
I think it's because you're in awe of my presence and I'm producing that, you know, you're getting nervous and you're like, oh my God, I'm kidding, obviously. Yeah. So, hey, it's to the best of us. And I have seen that caffeine can do that to you. So
I'll be the first to admit that I'm not a professional speaker and I get excited and I'm one of those people that I'll start to stutter because I've got like four ideas at once and I vocally can't express four statements at the same time. So it just comes out as gibberish. But what I wanted to focus on is Rochester because it's always on my mind. Rochester Business Connections is the name of the show. All our guests are from the region. I'm looking to expand and actually have a national series of really, you know, renowned people that can bring information to Rochester. But thus far, everybody's right from the region. And you're from the region as well, right? We didn't even know this by happenstance, you know, my father and my uncles. So you're from right here in Rochester as well. Tell us your history here in Rochester.
Yeah, so I was born in Philadelphia, and my parents moved here because my dad got a job at Xerox. Shocker.
There you go.
And I worked Kodak, Xerox, Kodak back and forth growing up. But no, I grew up here starting when I was 6 years old. Went to, you know, Council Rock and 12 Corners and high school here. And honestly, the majority had a great upbringing here. But like many of us, I wanted to get out and get as far away from Rochester when I went to college. So I ended up going to school in the University of Nevada at Las Vegas, way out west. And all I wanted to do was get to California and live the dream out there and be anywhere but Rochester. So sure. What I realized over the years, like many of us, is like, oh my God, Rochester is just such an incredible place. I have so many fond memories. It has so much to offer. So as an adult, I moved back here. I married my second marriage. I married a woman from Canada. And we had a child 11 years ago, an older dad. I won't date myself. And we decided, hey, the best place to raise a child is here in Rochester, New York. And I'm just blessed because now I am living vicariously through my son as he goes to the same schools that I went to way back in the 70s. And I am dating myself now, but I look young for my age, I swear. So, yeah, I am so proud to be here. There's no place I'd rather live in Rochester. And, you know, we love it. And we're part of the community. And we ski at Bristol Mountain where I grew up skiing. And during the winter now, because of the pandemic, it's really brought skiing to the forefront.
Sure.
But I love Rochester and I love everywhere in Rochester. And I'll say this. If you take a picture of the Finger Lakes, like Canandaigua Lake or whatever, and you took that picture and you shared it with somebody and said, hey, I was in France the other day and check out this picture. Nobody would notice a difference and look at the Finger Lakes and look at the beautiful Canandaigua Lake or Seneca Lake, whatever it might be, and say, wow, that's, you know. So what I'm saying is, and I've traveled all around the world, you know, a traveling professor, as I mentioned. I mean, this is one of the most beautiful places in the world. And I think, you know, you definitely learn that as you get older. So.
Yeah, it's incredible. And you're an educator, right? So the education here in Rochester, the inner city, we need more help. Ultimately, most of us already know that. But overall, the education in Rochester is great, right?
It's excellent. No, it's and I'd say it's even gotten better from the days when I was in school. And they are truly dedicated to education and improving the education. And I got to say, the teachers right now, because my son is completely virtual because of the pandemic, the teachers are doing an incredible job. I can actually hear them. I hear my son on Zoom and I hear the teachers talking. And I'm like, oh, my God, I wish my teachers were like that when I was young, listening to how they interact with my son and the rest of the class. So, no, the education is wonderful out here.
Oh, I love it. I heard my girlfriend's daughter on a Zoom the other day and I was like, wow, is that your professor? She sounds like a TEDx speaker. She's like so passionate and so excited over Zoom. It's like, wow, yeah.
No, it's impressive. especially in sixth grade, to hear teachers that passionate. And oh yeah,
that's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear. That's a beauty in Zoom, right? So there was a day that for education as a whole, you know, beyond just the public school system, if you wanted to have a speaker come in, you'd have to pay for them to fly in, their hotel, their dining. Nowadays, as a speaker, you don't have to leave your family. You don't have to leave the courtesy of your home. And as someone hiring a speaker, you can reach out to anybody, the best person to teach that course to your team. So this is a complete digression, but it's never been a better time for virtual education and to utilize that as a positive thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually I'm teaching in a couple of weeks. I was supposed to go to Croatia and teach a project management class. Obviously that's not going to happen. So I'm doing it all virtually. And I did do one last year as well. But the ability to, you know, to talk to the class virtually and bring in special guests. Usually I have a guest speaker and now I can bring in multiple speakers and break up into groups. And so it's truly, you know, I think Zoom and what the technology brings now really creates a very dynamic education environment. And you can still get to that one-on-one with the professor if you're just going one-on-one, or the group dynamics or in the small groups as well. And I would say you could almost give it more attention because now you can get into the groups, because I'll break them up into teams and I can get into that team group, drop in and say, hey, how's it going? They can share documents with me and everything. So definitely think that it's, I think if anything, this has enhanced the education moving forward, not only with myself and college students, but also younger students like my 11-year-old that is learning to almost go through a virtual education that will help him as he gets into high school and college.
Yeah, it's incredible. And hopefully it continues to expand. It, to me, and this isn't personal, it doesn't matter if it's 2 days mood or another product, any tool or technology that can come in and make the systems better is better. I won't go on a big rant, but I teach a class for a charter school. One thing I do is I have two memes, you know, maybe a dog at Walmart just looking super excited, and then a cat falling asleep on the laptop. And I try to ultimately poll and see how people are doing, you know, on any given day. And obviously the goal is that people are honest and we can uplift that mood. But I could see in education systems, workplace environments, taking these kind of anonymous polls rather than doing a, you know, poll right over Zoom, take an anonymous poll and see how the classroom's doing. See if the kids are engaged. I mean, we could talk all day about this, but it seems like the tools are being built if they don't already exist.
Yeah, exactly, Ben. And, you know, just led into something that I'm working on as well with my partners. Cool. Today's mood is developing the student piece of it. I've already got the everything outlined and the statements already developed, but to take this to high school, college, grade school, whatever it might be, to ask the students, how are you feeling right now in the class in real time? But also some follow-up statements in the student experience, not only just in the education, but looking at all the aesthetics and everything that make up, you know, the student experience. So we are going to be coming out with that mid-year, along with the customer experience piece, which I alluded to at the beginning of the conversation. So, yeah, we definitely see this going beyond what we're doing here just in with employees. But it definitely, you know, to get that live feedback and be able to make changes as opposed to waiting till the end of the semester. Get your feedback, which I get as a professor, it's great. But just thinking, if I had that as I was going and was able to make tweaks. And I often ask my classes, how are you? How's everybody doing? I will pull them often to do that. But to have some type of technology in place to do that would just be powerful.
Yeah, I like that it's anonymous too, because I don't want it to, I'm a dude. I don't want to tell people my feelings some of the time. So,
hey, that's changing. You know, us dudes are, you know, we need to become more open. And so, but yo, it's, yeah, I understand where you're going. Definitely.
Oh, I'm not callous. I'm definitely somewhere in between. You know, I'll express my emotions, but it's true. You know, if someone asks how I'm doing, the way I was raised and the way I believe is, you know, you have a positive attitude and you don't focus on the negative. It's not going to help me. However, having an outlet where maybe I can express myself anonymously would be helpful for me and a lot of people.
Right. Yeah, the one thing I always preach in just personal and professional academic life is just the power of positive attitude. We always have a choice on how we want our day to go. So I actually get to survey because we do it for ourselves, our own team, in today's mood. And honestly, I always answer it excited because I usually get in the morning and I'm pretty pumped up about what I'm doing. So I say, you know what? I'm excited and I'm going to continue that excitement throughout the day. So, you know, that's the other thing is trying to, you know, get people in touch and say, all right, I see how my moods have been. You know what? I have a choice in how I can, you know, so maybe having those epiphanies individually, you know, with using our software could also make an impact and maybe get people to be more positive and take that proactive. Hey, I want to try to keep it positive.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. My goal obviously is to be perceived as positive, but at the core, if you realize you're going through struggles, you can make that extra step and actually be more positive rather than pretending to be more positive. I think there's a big myth in this world that you're supposed to act like everything's okay. It's definitely in the customer service industry. Let's say you're a bartender or a waitress and someone's being inappropriate, sexually harassing you, and it's your role to just be positive. It's not that simple. We're all going through shit, you know?
Right. And we're not, yeah. And in one of the books I teach from customer centricity class is called The Experience Economy. And it talks about how all organizations can create an incredible, memorable experience no matter what they do. And it's not that, and the book talks about this, it's not like we're asking employees to fake it and to, you know, to you're going to be in a positive mood, you're going to be excited, but if we almost tell them to, when they're on with their clients or their patients, or whatever, to put themselves in, you know, on stage and, you know, kind of forget things, put it aside and put on that face because, you know, the client or the patient is going to be counting on that to make the day. So we all know that everybody has troubles behind the scenes, but if we can, you know, if we can kind of put on and get into that role, if you will, because it's, you know, how often have we walked into, I mean, I walked into a Tops here locally a couple of weeks ago and the cashier was miserable. And I could tell that, you know, when they're having conversations about how their, you know, personal things aren't going too well. And, you know, it really impacted how I felt leaving. But if that person could have put on a happy face, put on stage and said, you know what, I want to be engaged and be there for my customer. I could have had a much better experience than avoid it for a couple weeks, even though I had to go back there because it's so close. I prefer to shop at Wegmans, but I won't get into that. That's a whole nother show.
Sure. Yeah. And at the end of the day, I've been that miserable retail cashier that hated myself and hated my life. And at the end of the day, that happens. We need to be focusing on the tools we can to obviously uplift the workplace culture, which, we won't rant about Wegmans. They're known for workplace culture. So I guess they can exemplify that in Rochester.
How many people have you met at Wegmans that are not smiling and in a bad mood? I can't tell you the last time. I mean, it's very, very, you know, occasional. I would say it's an anomaly almost. So, and all those people are having challenges in their lives and things like that, but they're putting on the good face and empowering themselves to really, you know, to deliver an incredible experience for the customers. So God bless them.
Yeah. Real funny story that I was actually annoyed about is the chef. I wanted salsa. That simple. I wanted salsa, the homemade stuff, and they didn't have any. The chef comes out and goes to the Mediterranean bar and picks stuff out and chops stuff up and basically, you know, hand makes a salsa for me, I was in a rush. I was actually annoyed. I feel like a bad person. I was annoyed because I was in a rush. But he, the chef had and everything, went out of his way to bring all the ingredients together to make a homemade salsa for me. And he was more excited about doing it than I was to get it. So obviously I was the one in the bad mood, and he was the one who really cared about his job and wanted to serve.
Yeah, no, that happens. And what he was delivering was customization and personalization, which is huge in creating customer-centric culture. So when you can deliver something that is personalized to that customer, usually that will go back in the memory as a positive memory, not that it wasn't for you, that, oh my God, like they went out of their way to personalize that salsa for me. Oh my God. Like that's where you have that aha moment in the wow, like I'm going back there. So that's part of, yeah. And if, like I said, if you can get employees engaged to do that and up front before you, when you first start your company and create that customization, personalization, make that part of your culture, then you're just going to wow your customers.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I'm going to move to the rapid fire round because I looked at the time. We're running longer than usual, which is totally okay. I just love talking about this stuff. We're talking about fulfillment, so that's an important topic. But rapid fire round, this is where we keep it short and sweet, either or, and you can fill in the blank questions just to learn a little bit more about Marvin at the end of the day.
All right, I'm ready.
What about mornings? Are you drinking coffee or tea?
I drink coffee.
What about beer or wine at the end of the day?
At the end of the day, occasional shot of bourbon.
There you go. There you go. Yes. I've been, what's the term for it? I drink bourbon. I definitely have been known for that.
Yeah. I used to hate it, but as you get older, you get acquired these, the taste buds for it. So.
Yeah. And we, our family actually got COVID, so we don't have taste buds anymore. So that's a different story.
Wow.
But what about, mornings or evenings? Are you a morning person?
I am a morning person, and, you know, being a global company, I'm, you know, sometimes up at 4 or 5 in the morning to talk to somebody in Vietnam. So, never used to be, but now I am, and I love it. It's quiet.
Yeah, no choice when you're working internationally, right?
No.
What about, so you're up real early. Do you skip breakfast, or is there a secret sauce of what to eat in the morning when you're starting at 4 or 5 a.m.?
You know what? I believe in fasting, intermittent fasting, so I try to go till 11 or 12 for a light lunch and try to keep it healthy. It varies what I have, but I definitely believe in that intermittent breakfast, intermittent fasting, and then maybe having a banana and a piece of whole wheat toast and light butter, and try to keep it healthy.
Yeah, without a doubt. I intermittent fast all the time. We're filming this at 12:55. I have an 8 today, so my lunch comes at 1.
There you go. Get those 8 and 12, right? 12 and 8. Or no, 18 and... Wait a minute.
16 and 8.
16 and 8. Sorry. My addition has been terrible today.
There's a lot of ways to... I mean, some people do 18 and 6. The whole point is that, let's say you're doing 16 and 8. You have 8 hours in the day that you eat. So in theory, you could eat... Some people do as much food as they want. It depends on your diet because you're intermittent fasting in between, but you eat from 11 to 7, so you don't eat or drink any calories after 7, and you maybe skip breakfast or have a late lunch. When you put it that way, it seems pretty manageable for anybody.
Yeah, no, definitely.
But I could digress all day. Let's close out with, just one additional free tip, because – a lot of people, they might not be ready for 2 days mood. Once their organization gets bigger, they'll need it. But maybe they're someone like me, they're currently a sole proprietor. What can I start today to basically be on the right track, whether it's a tool or just a mindset, you know, anything in addition that I could start today to help me out?
Yeah, I would say I'm gonna say that take a look at the golden rule. Now, the golden rule you might think is, hey, I want to be treated how, you know, how I want to be treated. I want people to treat me how I want to be treated, or, you know, but the golden rule is really about treating people how they want to be treated. And I think, you know, people always think, well, I want to treat people how I want to be treated, but we're all motivated differently. And I think the key is to, when you're working with employees, leaders, even your own family and friends, is to understand that everybody is driven differently. Not everybody's driven like you. Not everybody is motivated by you. Not everybody has the same purpose, you know. But if you can understand what kind of personality they are, and I usually go with four personality traits: somebody that's a socializer, somebody that's a relator, somebody that's a thinker, and somebody that's a director. And this is something I learned many, many years ago in my master's program. I use all the time. So if I can identify somebody as a thinker, you know, somebody that maybe is in accounting and they're driven by metrics, then I can understand what's going to motivate that particular person. And I think treat people as they want to be treated. And that goes back to customization, personalization. And it doesn't take a lot to wow somebody, overwhelm somebody, and excite somebody, you know, by doing that, by delivering something that maybe that individual isn't expecting, but it's kind of in their personality around to say, oh my God, thank you so much. It just really resonated with me. So that's what I would say. Treat people how they want to be treated, not how you personally want to be treated.
Treat people as they want to be treated. Good stuff. Dr. Marvin, I appreciate it, man. I owe you your time. You taught me a lot today. How do people get in touch with 2 days mood? It's a two, right? Let's break down, you know, it's 2 days mood. What's the website, email? How do people stay in touch?
It's real easy. So it's 2days.com. So 2daysmood.com or marvin@2daysmood.com. That's the best way to do it. And check out our website, send me an email if you need some advice or mentoring, or you have some, you know, you want some insight on anything that I might be able to help you with, please reach out. I'd love to give my time and help people. So, Ben, thank you so much. I know it's great to meet you and, you know, connect with an Albert, if you will, and the family that I grew up next to. And it's a real pleasure. You're doing some incredible things here. And I really, really enjoyed the podcast very much and look forward to working with you and some of your listeners in the near future.
I love it. Yeah, it's been a pleasure to have you on. Thanks again. Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.